If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here in Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we talk Power Slam with Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. How are you doing this week, Kenny?
I'm good. I've got to apologise to the masses because we were meant to meet up this week in Manchester. We're going to have a Jaeger bomb, and it all kind of fell through. There was a lot of stuff going on that I was dealing with work-wise, wasn't able to make the trip, but I believe you will be making the trip next week to Manchester to come see Edge.
I will, Kenny. I'll be there.
So, maybe that's where the Jaeger bomb takes place, if we have the time. Maybe.
I thought I'd managed to sidestep this one, but it looks like it's still on.
Looks like it's going to happen. It's just where and when. So, lots been happening. If you had to encapsulate WWE's crown jewel pay-per-view in a sentence, how would you summarize it?
I thought the first 2 hours were a slog. I thought they were a chore. It was like the wrestling equivalent of drudgery. You know, other parts of it like were befitting of an event that was at best an inconvenience and at worst, let's face it, a total embarrassment. You know, I do wonder if this was Vince McMahon's revenge on those who had dared to object to his decision to make money from this country. I do wonder that, Kenny. I mean, I'm just going to throw that out there. What do you think?
I mean, I didn't feel after this like I was... I didn't feel like a satisfied customer.
I didn't feel like a valued customer either. We both subscribe to the WWE Network. So, I mean, like, we are paying customers. And I just felt like I was massively taken for granted by this event. And I just felt my loyalty. It was just assumed that I would forever subscribe to the network and would put up with anything that they produced. I mean, the best thing you can say about this show is it had some pretty damn impressive fireworks. That's the best thing I can say about it.
Best pyro in years. So we're not going to go through it, blow by blow by blow, because that would just take 5 years to do.
That's right. And we've already sat through it.
So let's just kind of talk about the big parts of it. So the world, let's start with the kind of undercard. We had, you know, the tag title match with The Bar and the New Day. We had the WWE title match with AJ and Joe. Did either of those matches do anything for you or excite you or give you anything positive to come out of it with?
Joe versus Styles felt like the worst of their four big matches. I mean, I thought the finish just came from out of nowhere, the phenomenal forearm. You're like, is that it? And it's like as if they just couldn't wait to get it over with as well. That was the impression I got. So no, that match didn't excite me. It didn't excite me beforehand. It certainly didn't excite me as it was taking place. It just felt like the show, something that they were just couldn't wait to get it over with. That's what that match screamed to me. The World Cup tournament, Kenny, I'm just still in disbelief about it. I mean, what was Kurt Angle doing losing like that? Just losing without putting up any resistance. I just thought they really devalued his star there. I just still can't quite believe it.
Do you think that, like... So, I mean, well, before we get to that, I also want to say we did see the WWE return of Hulk Hogan in the open.
As the host, and that was it. I thought, is he going to turn up again? And unless I fell asleep and missed something, I don't think he did.
He didn't. And it's funny because there was various points during the World Cup decisions where you thought, well, this could be Hogan coming out to change something. But no. How did Hogan do if you were scoring him at home?
He seemed like...
Rarely do you see Finn scrambling to find words.
You know, well, let me tell you something, brother. I mean, he went to his cliches. I mean, people knew who he was. So, I mean, that was something. He looked like he was glad to be there. And he was just, I don't know, it seemed a bit pointless to me. If he hadn't been there, I don't think the show would have been any worse. And I really feel like they should have held his return off for something that would have meant more. Like potentially Survivor Series or maybe Royal Rumble or WrestleMania. Just somewhere where it would have mattered. I mean, it's almost, when Crown Jewel had ended, you've been bombarded with so many matches and so many baffling decisions and booking and just weird events. You know, like Kane losing his mask in the main event. It was just the strangest thing. That it was just like, when it ended, you'd almost forgotten that Hogan had ever been on the show. I mean, would you agree with that, Kenny? I mean, it just seemed a bit inconsequential to me, his appearance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it didn't matter one jot. I mean, he looked happy to be there. He had his guns looked good. That's all you can really say. As someone who grew up a massive Hulk Hogan fan, and he was always my favourite wrestler, it's kind of sad that he has just become this, you know, he's not, I mean, it's like, you know, you contradicted to Steve Austin. If Steve Austin was to turn up on a show tomorrow, it would be like a megastar has arrived. But yeah. Hogan's just been so normalized and torn down by all the sort of poor life decisions that he's made.
Yeah.
That it's really just made him just another legend.
It has. And I mean, this was his first appearance on a WWE show in well over 3 years. So it should have been huge. It should have been one of the highlights of the show. And it wasn't. Because, I mean, partly because of everything you've just said, and partly because why was he there? There was no reason for him to be there, other than for him to get a payday, presumably. And he didn't have any future role, a further role in the show. And he should have been out there when it came to the World Cup final, surely, to make some sort of judgment when Shane McMahon and Baron Corbin were there. So just a wasted opportunity, really, to make his return mean something or mean a hell of a lot more than it did.
So let's get to the WWE Universal Championship match. Brock Lesnar and Braun Strowman, 3 minutes, 5 F5s, and Brock Lesnar is now the Universal Champion again. Were you shocked to see Brock lift the title? The insider story seems to be that when Roman Reigns in his battle with leukemia meant that he had to relinquish the title, that was when a deal was made with Brock for him to win the title again. What do you make of how they did it, what they did, and where they go from here?
Yeah, 3 minutes and 16 seconds I had the match down as. I don't know. I mean, we've talked a lot. When we were previewing this show, we were certain that Strowman was winning because he'd set everything up with Drew McIntyre. There was these things that he could do. He'd just turn babyface again. He needed this big win to make him feel like a huge star again. I mean, let's face it, the guy's been in trouble ever since he lost to Lesnar last year. He's never really recovered from that match. And this could have been huge. This could have been the moment for Strowman when he took his place as Universal Champion finally and became the company's top star who could defend the belt on house shows. And instead, they made the deal with Lesnar. Of course, Vince was going to make the deal with Lesnar because it's easy to make the deal with Lesnar. You know, back in the 90s, Vince used to complain all the time that WCW could only buy stars. It couldn't create them. It couldn't build them. And Vince is now in that. And that actually wasn't true of WCW. Yes, they bought a lot of talent, but they also recruited a lot of talent. And they nurtured a lot of talent, and they did make some stars. And now Vince is in this position where it's just easier to throw a load of money at Lesnar and give him the belt than to do something new and original and exciting. I mean, can you imagine if Strowman had won that belt, Kenny? He would have received a huge response on Raw on Monday. I'm not sure if it would have been that big on the night at Crown Jewel, but I think it would have been huge when he returned to the state, or returned to, you know, went to Europe or returned to the States. So I think it would have been a huge thing for him. And obviously it would have been a huge thing for Drew McIntyre because they could have had a feud over the title. And he just would have set all these new and interesting things up. And instead we've got Lesnar as champion again, the guy who Kurt Angle had said on Raw was the worst champion of all time. I think he said that in August. So I just thought the whole way it played out was despair, Kenny, basically. I despair. One thing I will say, that Braun Strowman looked like he was in agonizing pain as he walked down that long ramp. He looked like he was really struggling. But he's still out there. So, I mean, that can't be the reason why they didn't put the title on him. If he was not going to be wrestling, then, he wouldn't have been on Raw. He wouldn't have been setting up the Survivor Series and other shows. But you look at Braun, this should have been his night, Kenny. Despite his knee problems, this should have been his night. And instead, they just went with the easy option, which has been Vince's modus operandi for far too long.
Well, yeah, I don't know if it was his night. I think that Braun Strowman has been one of the most baffling booked guys of 2018. You know, he teams with WrestleMania with a child. He then is, you know, always positioned. You know, he's Mr. Money in the Bank, but then he never cashes it in. Then he just loses it at Hell in a Cell through no real reason. Yeah. And then he turns heel. So it's like, I can't really say that if he'd won the belt, it'd have been like, yes, excellent, he's now the top guy. But they kind of backed themselves into a corner because the Roman thing was their one go-to. And then when that was gone, they didn't have anything. And then Vince made the call to go with Brock over Braun. I don't think either of them were a particularly exciting option right now.
No, but if you had Braun there, he's a guy that's there every week. He's never held the title. It's something new. He's a rising star, or at least he was. I mean, as you said, the booking of him this year has just been abysmal. I mean, it's like going back to Big Show or Lex Luger or something like that, where they do these emergency turns. And you think, well, this is just going to have a long-term detrimental effect on this character. And obviously it has with Braun as well. Had he become champion here, at least it would have been something different. At least somebody would have been defending the belt on a regular basis. And it would have set up that Drew McIntyre feud, which we talked about last week, Kenny, has been something that would be really good for both men and really good for the fans as well. Instead, we got Brock Lesnar as champion and he's wrestling AJ Styles again at Survivor Series. Who cares? You know, okay, they'll probably have a good match, but who cares? We've already seen it.
Well, I hope they prove us wrong, but yeah, it's not... I mean, I'm a sucker for the Survivor Series Raw versus SmackDown stuff, and I liked Brock and AJ last year, but, you know, you got to believe Brock's not going to be defending the title at TLC. Will he be defending at the Rumble? Will his next title defense be WrestleMania? And I think the thing that, for me, that's the more pressing issue is, who's going to beat Brock for the title? I don't really think it should be Braun. I'd like to see it be Seth Rollins, but I just don't know. I don't know what they're going to do.
I don't see how it can be Braun now. I don't even see how you can really push Braun as a top guy anymore. I mean, you could. But I mean, had he won the belt, had he won the vacant title at Crown Jewel, that would have repaired a lot of the damage that they'd done to him this year. Mm-hmm. I just think it was a huge mistake. I just despair. I just think it was just the easy way out, the gutless way out. You know, for a guy who used to talk about the size of his grapefruits, you know, Vince in this match, to me, the guy just showed no balls at all.
Yeah, I can't argue with you. So from Brock Lesnar beating Braun Strowman to the World Cup tournament.
Yes.
What the fuck was this? We have in the first round Rey Mysterio over Randy Orton, Dolph Ziggler over Kurt Angle, Seth Rollins over Bobby Lashley, and The Miz over Jeff Hardy. Then in the semi-finals, we have Dolph Ziggler over Seth Rollins and The Miz over Rey Mysterio, which leads us to the final of The Miz versus Dolph Ziggler. The Miz then gets injured, in inverted commas. So Shane McMahon steps in to face Dolph Ziggler. Gets down to his vest, so he looks like Dean Ambrose's dad. And he then pins Dolph Ziggler clean with a coast-to-coast, and Shane McMahon is best in the world. He's celebrating like he's just won the World Cup of, like, football or something. I mean, I'm very much looking forward to your thoughts, Finn.
Yeah, the tournament just felt like... It just felt like guys were not really trying, and people were losing far too quickly because they had to keep the matches so short, which of course they did. As I said earlier, seeing Kurt Angle lose that way to Dolph Ziggler, and it's not that I don't think Dolph Ziggler is somebody who can realistically beat Kurt Angle, because of course he can, but just the whole way it was laid out, it just felt to me like, is this guy... I mean, it was prior to each match, the ring announcer read out a list of all their achievements, which only sort of accentuated how ridiculous it was that Ziggler had scored this, not effortless, but far too easy pin on Kurt Angle. That really offended me. And I just had, at that point, I mean, I couldn't really be bothered with the World Cup tournament in the first place, Kenny, because I thought, well, what's this going to mean in the long run? I mean, what the hell did Braun Strowman's victory in the greatest Royal Rumble mean? I mean, it's just not been mentioned. It was just, again, inconsequential. So we had this World Cup tournament with these strange results, with these guys doing jobs far too easily. So none of it really sort of computed as you were watching it. And then we got to this final, as you said, with Dolph Ziggler and The Miz. And the bell never rang, and they started battling. And then The Miz suffers this obviously fake... was it a knee or an ankle injury? On SmackDown he was saying it's an ankle injury. I thought on the night it was a knee injury. What did you think it was, Kenny?
I thought it was an injury to my brain, Finn. I thought my brain had... No, I thought it was a knee, to be fair.
Yeah, I thought it was a knee on the night. But, I mean, who knows in the modern era?
Well, he was gripping the fucking knee.
Yeah, well, on SmackDown he said, oh, my ankle's all right. So maybe the injury had travelled to his ankle between, like, Friday and Tuesday. I mean, these things happen in wrestling, Kenny. So, I mean, it's just... So
you know, we were watching it in a group of friends, and when Shane McMahon came in, we were all kind of, like, laughing because it was so bonkers, and then he wins, and we were just all cackling. Because, like, you can't even be angry because it's just so batshit crazy. That we very rarely as a wrestling fan are you gobsmacked, but I was gobsmacked.
Yeah, I mean, so was I. I mean, so then Shane inserts himself in the match because The Miz can't continue. I want to say that The Miz's selling was totally unconvincing. I really feel like The Miz this year, it's been a bad year for him in terms of me taking him seriously as a performer. I think he's become more like a cartoon character than a serious wrestler, sad to say. So I thought his performance here was totally unrealistic. And then, but I mean, maybe that fit the occasion. You know, maybe it needed to be a cartoon performance to fit this cartoon show. And then Shane's cartoonish appearance in the match. So he just enters himself in the match and then defeats Dolph Ziggler again far too easily. Ziggler really did not offer that much resistance to a guy who's 49 in January and he's not a full-time wrestler. And then after Shane had scored the pin with the coast-to-coast, the Van Terminator, Rob Van Dam's Van Terminator type, well, he didn't use the chair, but you know what I mean, the coast-to-coast RVD rip-off, there's a colossal fireworks display to mark this historic victory. And then Shane celebrates like a giddy mark, runs off with the trophy, shouting, I can't believe it, while Rene on commentary is saying this is insane. I mean, probably Rene's best call to date as an announcer. It was insane, Kenny.
It was batshit crazy. So the story has been that this has always been the plan. Shane was always going to be the winner of the tournament, and this is to lead to his heel turn. What say you?
I don't care. I just don't care about Shane and his heel turn. I mean, we had on SmackDown on Tuesday, he then sort of tried to, because he was getting booed loudly by the audience, who obviously resented the whole way that this played out, as I'm sure 90% of the people watching did. And then Shane pipes up and said, oh, this trophy belongs to everyone in the SmackDown locker room. You know, I'm not the best in the world. And then Daniel Bryan comes out and says, well, I'm really pleased that you said that. Well done. So it felt like we were, at the end of Crown, or rather at the end of the tournament at Crown Jewel, this was stage one of a Shane heel turn. You're right. But it wasn't really something that, it wasn't like a despicable or a nefarious deed. It was just ridiculous. It just was stupid. So it didn't really feel like a heel turn moment, especially since the guy he beat in the final was a heel. So that made it doubly bizarre and baffling. And then on SmackDown, we had Shane playing babyface. So this could well lead to a Shane heel turn, but the storytelling is such a muddled shambles that how do we really get from where we are to that heel turn? And when we get there, who's really going to care, Kenny?
Yeah, I mean,
The storytelling's just just dreadful. It's just dire. It's just like, how can people who call themselves writers produce something this awful? I just don't get it. This whole tournament was just, everything about it was just, I feel it's something like the Greatest Royal Rumble that no one will be talking about in about a week or 2 weeks' time because they'll just want to forget it even happened.
So that brings us to the main event, which is The Undertaker and Kane against Shawn Michaels and Triple H. Talk me through it.
Well, Kane's gut arrived in the ring 5 seconds before the rest of him.
He's so shite that his mask fell off. He's so bad.
And, during the match, Sean's nailing Kane and his mask falls off and he's at ringside. And then they got the camera off Kane and the camera was accidentally on him because Sean had done the big moonsault to the floor. Then the mask went back on. It's just like a pantomime, wasn't it? The match lasted far too long. It's just like you had all these matches on the undercard that were far too short. And was that so that you could give these guys even more time? Presumably. This match just never ended. I thought Shawn looked pretty good, but it was just sad to see him in the ring, Kenny. I just did not want to see this comeback. And on the night, obviously the match was greatly hindered by, let's mention, Triple H's torn pectoral muscle. Now, I believe he suffered that injury. Was it about the second or third bump of the match? It was right at the start, wasn't it?
Yeah, near the beginning.
So, he was unable to use his right arm, so he was having to do the chops with his left arm. Now, whether or not you think Triple H was a warrior for completing the match, I think on this occasion, I think you've got to give him credit for doing it. If somebody says, well, that was ridiculous and he shouldn't, I do kind of get that. But he is, obviously, the COO, he's a big deal there, he's a part-timer, he's been there before with injuries, he thought he could do it. And I thought he did a really good job getting through the match in obvious pain. And each time he's taking a bump, you could see that he was in agony. So let's give him, I think we need to give him credit for that, Kenny. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the thing is, The Undertaker can still have a decent match if it's put under 15 minutes and it's booked well, but unfortunately he's in there with Triple H, who only does a 25 minute minimum.
Yeah.
Even though he also should only be doing 15 minutes. You get Kane, who, Kane should be arrested if he steps in a wrestling ring. He's that bad.
Yeah.
And Shawn Michaels was better than all three of them. It's just really sad to see that he had to kind of, he was forced to be a part of this.
Well, he wasn't forced to be, was he, Kenny?
But he, after 8 years out, was better than all of them.
Yeah, well, that's partly because he's not wrestled for 8.5 years, hasn't he? So he hasn't had that wear and tear. It's quite funny. Rennie said on commentary, it's taken so much to get Shawn out of retirement. I thought maybe she missed a word there. Like, it's taken so much money to get Shawn out of retirement. I thought that would have been more apt, but I think she probably would have been fired on the spot had she said that. So that amused me. But yeah, Shawn was better than the others. But I mean, there again, he always was. I mean, he always was great. And that was why he retired in 2010, because he was still at the top of his game and he was still, you know, arguably, I would say definitely top five in the world at that point, if not top three. So, I mean, that was why he got out, because he wanted to go out on top. He didn't want to hang around too long and be this old guy who didn't know when it was time to quit. And he was in a good position financially, and all these other factors as well, I'm sure, contributed to the decision. So to see him return for what was like a match that was basically doomed because of its length, its location, obviously was then greatly handicapped by Triple H's injury, which could not have been foreseen. You know, and then it was, I didn't want to see this match. I didn't want to see Shawn come back in the first place. And he didn't embarrass himself by any means. But I mean, this was still a match that I didn't need to see. I mean, the whole damn show, who the hell needed to see this show, Kenny? I mean, really? Who needed to see it?
I hope Shawn has another match or two and the return isn't just this as the memory. But I don't know if he's going to want to do anything else after this.
Yeah.
Maybe he just kind of goes, well, I probably should just stay away.
Well, that's it. I mean, it's a risk, isn't it? It's like, it's almost like the Undertaker Reigns match, isn't it? It's like, well, can I go out like that? No, I can't go out like that. Oh, you've got to go out like that because, you know, you symbolically retired. And it's like, well, clearly he's thought, well, I didn't want to end it like that. I want to come back and leave people with a better memory. And maybe Shawn will feel the same way. Now he's made the decision to return. I think he's going to do something else. I think he'll definitely do something at WrestleMania, because what the hell else have they got for WrestleMania? I mean, what have they got for WrestleMania? Shawn really needs to be a part of that show to make it special. And I think with the right atmosphere and the right storyline, I think he can have a much better match than this. I think a much better performance than this.
And I think that
people will want to remember, because who wants to? People just want to erase this event from their memories.
Say you had to rate Crown Jewel out of 10, what would you give it out of 10?
It can't be a 1, because Shawn didn't embarrass himself, and Shawn, well, actually, no, it's going to have to be a 1, Kenny. It's got to be a 1. It's got to be a 1. I mean, I kind of feel like that's a harsh criticism, because some of it wasn't utterly awful. But the overall show, as I said, it's something that I just wish never even happened. What would you give it, Kenny?
I would go like a 3.
A 3? I think that's generous.
3?
That's generous.
I'll give it a 3 out of 10.
I'll give it a 10 for the pyro and a 1 for everything else.
okay, let's move on. Got a couple other small topics. So a topic I thought was pretty interesting was Tetsuya Naito did an interview with Tokyo Sports this week, and he revealed in the interview that he was offered a WWE contract right after this year's Dominion in June. And he says he turned it down, and he said, "I didn't even give it a thought. This New Japan ring is already the world's number one stage. The fans know this. That's why I think we should focus on our home crowd before looking international." Are you surprised to hear that WWE reached out to Naito, and do you think he made the correct decision in staying where he is?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, apparently Okada has turned down at least one offer dating back some years, and he's probably received further offers on top of that. I mean, this is all like New Japan, and if you think of what's going on with the Madison Square Garden show and New Japan's invasion of the USA, I mean, WWE, if it signs its big stars, it obviously damages New Japan's ability to grow on US soil. So there's more to it than just the guy in question. It's a strategic move as well. So I'm not surprised that they made him an offer. And I think he made the right decision not going. I mean, look at Nakamura. I don't know whether Nakamura is going to re-sign when his contract expires, which I think is coming up presumably in January, I would think. I mean, I hope he doesn't. But if he does, I can kind of understand why he would do, because the money's great. It's an easy schedule for him. It's easy matches for him. So if he feels he's done all he's ever going to do in wrestling and has already proven himself and doesn't want to put himself through the physical pain of working those tough matches anymore, maybe he'll just say, well, you know what? I'll just collect some easy money in WWE. So I can kind of understand why he would do that, why he would re-sign with WWE. But Naito, he's one of New Japan's big stars. He's younger than Nakamura. He's no doubt, he's obviously aware of what's happened to Nakamura out there. He's just become a sort of mid-carder that doesn't really mean anything. And I think he feels that he could one day be the company's top star, or at least, if not the top star, one of the top two stars. So I can understand why he's staying with New Japan. I don't think he would really do very well in the WWE system. I think he's much safer staying where he is. He might make a little bit more money, but if...
If you're like a Kevin Owens or a Sami Zayn or a Seth Rollins or whatever, it is worth you making the jump, because you are going to be a top guy and you are going to do well and whatever. Whereas, yeah, I mean, if you're Naito and you're looking at Nakamura and you're going, that would be the future.
Yeah, and probably not even that. He probably wouldn't even reach that level. Potentially, he'd end up, you know, with the Tammy on 205 Live or something like that. I mean, who knows?
I would love to hear, like, if they had said to Naito, you know, we really want to offer you a contract, whatever, and he was to say, well, look at what you did with Nakamura, what would be different now? I would love to hear their pitch to him. Love to hear it.
Well, I mean, WWE, when it does these things, it'll tell you when they're trying to recruit you, they'll tell you what you want to hear. They'll give you the opportunity speech and, like, you know, we're in all these countries, we're this, we're that, the other, you can go much further with us, you're going to blah, 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 blah. So it depends on whether or not you want to be part of that machine, part of that system. With Rollins and Owens and Zayn, they were never going to be stars with New Japan. Maybe Rollins could have done all right in New Japan, but they were all Ring of Honor guys or indie guys. So, I mean, of course, signing with WWE was going to be a huge step up in terms of status and earnings. With Naito, he's one of the big names in New Japan, so he'll be making good money. He's got the status. And perhaps Kenny likes living in Japan. Perhaps he doesn't want to move to the States. Maybe that's a big part of it as well.
This is true.
You know what I mean? You like living in Scotland. I mean, would you want to move to America? I mean, you're not going to be able to get any of that deep fried crap over there, are you?
Have you been to America? Of course you
could. No, I mean, like the deep-fried fried Mars bars. They don't do that over there, do they? What about Iron Brew? You'd have to have it shipped in specially.
You say that like it's a joke. I 100% would have to have it shipped in specially. No, I quite like living in a country where if I get sick, I get taken care of and don't have to... I mean, no offence to anybody who's American listening to this, but see, as an outsider, you just go, no thanks. Like... We're the greatest country in the world, but you can't have healthcare. Okay. Yeah. Madness.
It's the whole cultural thing, isn't it? I wouldn't want to live in the States. So, I mean, I like visiting the States. I'm hoping to visit there next year. I've been for a while, so I'm looking.
There's stuff I love about America. Yeah, it's a great place to visit. And there's so many good things about it and so much fun stuff and da-da-da. But, like, even, like, you know, I just got finished last night with watching Series 2 of Making a Murderer. And you go, you know, whether you think that those guys are guilty or not, you look at the legal system over there and how it is, you know, designed to not help people. It is, you know, like you if anybody's watched Making a Murderer, and you watch the confession of Brendan Dassey, who is a 16-year-old boy with an IQ of 60, who is made to sit there, and they basically feed him the information they want him to say. And then that's the only thing they've got on him. There's no DNA evidence, no nothing, and he's going to sit in jail for the rest of his life.
Yeah, I haven't watched the series yet.
It's not going to make you want to fly over there and move there tomorrow. But, you know, in terms of... we've just moved off onto a weird tangent. But, I know what you mean. I think that with Naito, as someone who only... You know, I see maybe 3-4 New Japan matches a year... If I could get in front of him, I would say never go there.
Yeah,
that is not a good move for you. Like, because he's really quirky and he's really interesting, and he's kind of he's not your typical wrestler, and that's what's so good about him. And I just don't. They wouldn't know what to do with him. They would not have a clue what to do with him.
I mean, it's taken a long time to get to this position, and for this guy, there's been all sorts of wrong turns along the way. So if he were to go to a totally different promotion in another country, he'd effectively be starting again.
Now, the only thing that would make me say that change my mind on it, the only thing that would make me change my mind is if Triple H took over. You know, if he took over the main roster, and then I would say, yeah, maybe you should go there.
Yeah, that would be a completely different conversation then, wouldn't it? So,
but under Vince, I just don't think that you would. It's not worth it. No. Also, Takemichi Inoku is facing some scandal in Japan, Finn, because a Japanese magazine called Flash has revealed that he's been having an extramarital affair for the last 8 years. He's apologised on Twitter. So I just wanted to ask, if that's what constitutes a scandal in Japan, can you imagine how many American wrestlers would be sweating right now? if it was the same amount, because like it's funny that in you know, I was reading this yesterday, and somebody else, a couple people talked about it. Apparently in Japan, like if you're found out to be cheating on your spouse, it's like a huge scandal. You know, like much bigger than it is over here in the West, where it's kind of a lot more normal that stuff goes on. Not that it's right, but it's funny to me. Poor Takemichi Inoku.
He shouldn't have been playing away from home, should he, Kenny?
No, he shouldn't have. I mean, he's a wee bastard, but you know. Just saying, if you live in America, I mean, I'm not going to enter.
Listen, Taka's, I mean, how old's Taka? He's probably a few years younger than me. He's definitely in his 40s anyway. So, I mean, he's like, hold on a minute. He's lived long enough to know the way it all operates out there. He knows the score. His name was associated with his company. 45 years old. Thought he was just a few years younger than me. So, I mean, he's a guy that knows how it all works out there. He's somebody who has status. You know, it's like, what can you say? I mean,
yeah,
you're right.
You know what? You've turned me on it. Fuck you, Takemichi Inoku, you prick.
I mean, what can you say? It's like, if in your culture, this is a huge, huge deal, and this is something that you're going to be ruined if you do, that should give you an incentive not to do it. That should keep you in line, Kenny. Rules and boundaries. Where the hell are we without rules and boundaries, Kenny? Where would we be? Where would we be on this podcast without rules and boundaries?
Rules help control the fun.
That's it. As what was it? As Vince McMahon said on the episode of Heat we've just reviewed, discipline is the cornerstone of corporate communication. I mean, I think that can be applied to normal life as well.
I think so. Okay, so let's move on a little bit. We're not going to talk about the full episodes, but Raw and SmackDown were taped in Manchester this week. On Raw, we saw new tag team champions with AOP, and we saw Drew McIntyre get a big win over Kurt Angle in the main event. What did you make of Raw this week, and what were your highlights? And overall, I've heard mixed reviews. Some people said it was a terrible Raw, some people said it was good, some people in the middle. Where do you sit on this week's episode?
I mean, at least there were some different things happened on it. I'll give WWE credit for that. But I mean, there was a few things on there that just made you scratch your head in bewilderment. Like Nia Jax versus Ember Moon. Jax won the match again. Pretty flat. I would say a humdrum match. Ember Moon, why didn't she win that Battle Royal at Evolution? I mean, she'd be in a completely different place to what she is now. Then Tamina Snuka comes out, and we've now got a Tamina Snuka and Nia Jax tag team, Kenny. What do you think of that?
It would not be my choice to put Big Tam and Nia together. But, yeah, I mean, again, it's just one of those things that it's like, the idea, I guess, is, you know, Ronda Rousey needs challengers. If she's going up against Nia Jax and Tamina's in the corner, then that's something to do. I mean, it's fine. I mean, I'm glad that Ember didn't win the Battle Royal now, because if she'd won the Battle Royal to then get this treatment, I would have been far more annoyed. But I just hope that, at some point in 2019, Ember gets a push because she's much more interesting than Tamina Snuka. And it's like, I mean, she's there because of her last name. She's not very good. She's not been very good for years and years and years. No offense. She's. I've met her once before. She's lovely, but.
I think it's fairly safe to say that if she isn't going to be any good at this point, then she's never going to be any good.
Exactly. I mean, I have no interest in seeing Tamina Snuka wrestle at all. She's like Bryan Adams. You know, we talked about this in the Power Slam podcast, yeah. the Heat thing. She's like Bryan Adams. You never fucking get rid of her.
Yeah,
You thought having a murdering dad would help, but no. She's still around.
Aliyah scored like a win over Dolph Ziggler. This should have been a milestone in Elias's career, and it just felt like nothing because there was no story supporting it. And that just hit me afterwards. It's like, oh wow, Elias has just scored this big win over Dolph, the guy who got to the World Cup final, and then Elias scores this win. It just felt like it didn't really matter because there was no story behind it or nothing at stake. So I thought that was a disappointment. You know, on one hand, you've got progress, but on the other hand, you've got, well, if you'd actually, you guys who are writers could actually give us a reason to give a toss about this match, then maybe we might remember it and it might be seen as a milestone and a turning point in Elias's career. I mean, he did that babyface turn the other week and he just feels like he's been floundering ever since.
He was super over in Manchester, though. He was very over.
He was.
And it was like 2 months ago that Seattle thing happened? Where he got booed for 6 minutes?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I thought Ronda Rousey did a really good promo. That and the main event were, I think, my highlights. She said she admired Becky Lynch, but then like mocked her previous career as a stewardess. I really like the way Ronda is including like reality in all the promos. And these are all things you can look up and like, oh, yeah, she really was a stewardess for a while. And then she referred to herself as the baddest bitch on the planet. So I thought that was a little bit of an edge there. We need more of that in WWE. So I thought that was a good promo. I mean, the Ronda Rousey versus Becky Lynch match is about one of the few original things on the Survivor Series card. And to me, is the match that I'm looking forward to more than any other, mostly because it's an original match. And secondly, because Ronda and Becky Lynch have both done really good promos to push it. What did you think to Ronda's promo, Kenny?
Yeah, no, I thought she was really good. The idea that it would have been very easy for Becky just to get cheered and Ronda to get booed, but Ronda like talking about how much she's happy about Becky's new attitude and she likes the fact she's got a challenge. Ronda brought it. Ronda was like one of those good baby faces that actually brings in what the fans are thinking. She's not ignoring it. Yeah. And I love the line about, you know, you might be the man, but I'm the baddest bitch on the planet. It was a great line. So Ronda and Becky is definitely my most. I mean, I'm looking forward to the 5-on-5 men's match. I'm looking forward to Rollins and Nakamura could be really good if given the time. Becky and Ronda for me is the match of the show.
Yeah. Okay.
What about Drew McIntyre in the main event getting to beat Kurt Angle with his own ankle lock?
Yeah, that's right. Kurt Angle versus Drew McIntyre. It was supposed to be Baron Corbin, but Corbin had a show-long storyline with Braun Strowman. But I don't think we mentioned that prior to the Lesnar versus Strowman match, Corbin nailed Strowman over the back of the head with the title belt. I don't think we mentioned that, Kenny.
I don't think we did, but yeah, so Corbin had nailed him with the belt and the idea was that he wasn't going to be in good enough shape to compete.
That's it. That was a bit of a glaring omission there. So Corbin, throughout the show, had been doing a runner from Braun Strowman. He kept hiding out from him and Braun kept finding him and eventually Corbin made his getaway in a SUV. So it ended up being Kurt Angle versus Drew McIntyre. The story here was that Angle had to win the match in order to be the captain of Team Raw. I thought it was a good match. I thought they had better matches in Impact Wrestling. McIntyre actually beat Angle by submission on the February 9th, 2016 Impact in what was a better match than this. That also, Kenny, took place in Manchester. So, I mean, it was a good match, but I, having seen and remembered the Impact matches, they were better. Felt like a big win for Drew nonetheless. Didn't really object to this loss for Angle, because it was in the main event. It was against Drew McIntyre, who is being pushed as a future headliner. So I had no objection to the outcome at all. And as I said, we've already seen it before, or at least fans of Impact Wrestling have seen it before. So yeah, what did you think to it?
Drew feels like a main event player now. I love that he beat Kurt Angle with his own ankle lock, and I loved how this is how you make somebody. What Kurt Angle did for Drew McIntyre in this show, this is how, to me, this was just like, whoa, this guy, Drew McIntyre, feels like a star, feels like a top guy. I really enjoyed it. What did you make of SmackDown this week? We had a lot of Survivor Series build, the debut of Nikki Cross, promo from Becky Lynch, Shane McMahon ruining our lives, all of the above.
You could tell that the crowd was not large. You could just sort of hear the echo when the fans were chanting. I understand that the crowd, most of the upper section was, I think, tarped off. So it felt like a small crowd as you were watching it. I'm really not feeling it at all with SmackDown, with SmackDown always Survivor Series. We had Paige out there, and then Shane came out and he did the climb down. He let us know that he was actually a babyface and not a heel. It wasn't all about him. And then Brian had said, thank you, Shane, for humbly acknowledging that you don't consider yourself to be the best in the world. So that was a nice little moment there. Then The Miz came out, and it's like pantomime performance with the cell job on his ankle now, not on his knee, on his ankle.
Maybe the pain shot down his leg over the weekend.
Well, that's it. I mean, in pro wrestling, these things do move. So Shane then announced, after The Miz came out and bragged about how brilliant he was, Shane, who had already appointed Daniel Bryan as the captain of Team SmackDown, he then decided that Miz and Bryan should be co-captains. So that just felt like that's just come from out of nowhere. That just felt like, let's just throw that out there because we're in such a rush to promote this show, because we're putting on so much. We're putting on so many events right now that we don't have time to promote any of them effectively. That's one of the big problems they've got at the moment. They're just spreading themselves far too thin, which is resulting in rush TV programs, rush storylines, and segments like the one that opened SmackDown this week, where you got, you know, Miz and Bryan put as suddenly as co-captains putting the team together. So, I mean, I was disappointed that then backstage, Miz and Bryan agreed that Shane McMahon should be a member of Team SmackDown. Shane McMahon. Bryan chose Rey Mysterio, another guy in his 40s for Team SmackDown. And then the final member of the team, it was going to be a match between Jeff Hardy and Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe won that match, so he's been added to the team. This is Samoa Joe, the guy who's coming off loads of big losses to AJ Styles. So it just feels like a team that's sort of been thrown together with a bunch of like veterans, and no one new is getting a chance. So I was really disappointed by that. And just little things, Kenny, like we had a match between Rey Mysterio and Andrade Almas. No Zelina Vega. Was that a cost-cutting measure? I mean, what's going on? Why is she not there?
I know.
I enjoyed seeing Nikki Cross. She came out with Sanity. I mean, when Sanity came out, I was thinking, there's all these searchlights. I'm thinking, have LAX moved over to WWE? Because that's kind of like the LAX entrance with all the searchlights and stuff. It's like, oh no, it's Sanity. It's like so long since we've seen him, I completely forgot that that was their music.
I know, it took a while for the fans to pop for it.
And then, you know, we got Nikki Cross. She didn't really get the reaction that I was hoping for, Kenny, I've got to say. And Becky Lynch, I felt, beat her. I mean, she had to look strong. So, I mean, was this the time to introduce Nikki Cross to the main roster? I don't know whether it was.
It didn't bother me too much. I thought Nikki looked good enough in the match, and I thought the fans reacted relatively well to her. But again, the problem is you're in Manchester and she's from Scotland. So there's that weird kind of like, yeah, like it's tough. If this was if this had been in Glasgow, different story. Yeah. Different story. Yeah, I actually want to ask you very quickly. Cameron's
that,
site
that would have been, and that would have been the time, and that there would have been a huge thing for her, and it would have got the reaction that they sought, and would have been seen as a much bigger success than it was.
Yeah, for sure. And Cameron Sykes had asked us this. I think we should just cover it a little bit. How worried do you think WWE should be about low attendances at Raw and SmackDown in the UK? I mean, one of the issues is that, you know, they come into these tours where they've got maybe like 12, 13, 14 shows in a 1 or 2 week period, and it's not a huge breadth of country, really.
No, it's not. Absolutely right, yeah.
So, I mean, that, to me, that's kind of part of it, and it's like if WWE's coming to, you know, you live in Glasgow and they're coming to Glasgow, you'll go to Glasgow. If you live in London, you'll go to London. Not everybody's just going to travel to Manchester. Whereas I think if the TVs weren't part of a tour with so many dates, they might get better attendance. But also, not a lot of things tend to happen on the UK TV shows, which hurts it as well.
Exactly. We didn't even have the big Union Jack flags or the taxi in the phone box. I mean, another omission, Kenny, but probably down to cost cutting. You know, I mean, they only made $33 million in the last quarter. They can't afford these things.
So there you go. Yeah. Well, so what we'll do to kind of finish off the...
Sorry, Kenny, I never even answered the question of Cameron's there. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they are worried about it. To me, the product feels cold right now. I really feel like, as they did with Crown Jewel, I feel like WWE's taking its audience for granted with a lot of recycled matches and feuds. I don't feel like there's really, I don't sense any sort of drive or determination here from this company to break any new ground. I think they've got really comfortable. This was something I always feared would happen when they came up with the WWE network, because you wouldn't really have to try as much as they used to have to try. And I feel that that's been borne out by what we've seen over the last 4.5 years. We've got Becky Lynch, she's doing well right now. Drew's doing all right. But how many acts really feel hot? Not that many. And you feel like, and you look at it and think, WWE has really failed to maintain the value of a lot of existing players, you know, such as Braun Strowman, such as Nakamura, such as Dolph Ziggler. Dolph's done all right this year, but I mean, there's a lot of guys there that don't really mean so much anymore. And also, I always used to think that when WWE came over to this country, that they would bring over a new star that the audience hadn't seen before, and that would be a big part of it. Oh, I've got to go and see so-and-so live, or we've got to go and see him live because this is our first chance to see them live. And you don't really get that anymore because they're not in the business really of really trying to create new stars on a constant basis, where you feel like it's a star creation machine, which WWE at various points in its history has been. So I definitely do feel like the company right now is many of its own failings are the result of this low attendance. Should they be worried? Well, I don't think they really are worried because they're making so much damn money. So it's not really going to be a huge cause for concern for them. I don't think they're going to make that many adjustments. If they were losing money, on the verge of losing money, then they would approach it very differently. But because they're so financially stable and have got so much cash reserves and just so much money coming in next year, I don't think they're really going to change too much about what they're doing. One other thing, maybe, I feel like WWE is presenting too many events. Just so much product right now. And you think, Kenny, if you are a subscriber to the WWE network and you think most people who would buy a ticket to Raw or SmackDown are, once you've watched all that WWE has to offer each week and there's so much product on there, can you really face any more wrestling? Do you really want to pay? How much is it for a ticket to one of these shows? It's very expensive, isn't it?
Yeah, 40 quid at minimum.
Right, 40 quid. And you think, let's just watch at home, or, you know, I've overdosed on wrestling this week. There's just so much to watch. Can I face going to the show? And I think that's a problem as well. I think they're kind of overexposing themselves by just producing so many shows, so many weekly programs. Maybe that's...
Well, you know, it's fine. I think there's a... I think it was Sean Campbell in our Facebook community who put a thing up about Tony Nese. It's very difficult because I've heard Tony Nese's name done in an Irish accent by somebody and I can't get it out of my head. So it's almost like the Father Ted voice, Tony Nese! So I cannot get it out of my head, which is a very colloquial reference. Down with this sort of thing. Drunk! So anyway, Father Ted references aside, he was talking about how Tony Nese is really good on 205 Live, and, you know, people talk about how, you know, good stuff is in NXT UK. So, like, for me, I watch Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. Now, I also watch them because I cover those three shows. I watch a smattering of non-WWE stuff when it comes up now and then, but that's about as much as I do, and then I do the pay-per-views, because I can't really face much more wrestling in a week. So I don't really watch NXT UK, and it's not that it's not going to be good. It's just I just can't watch more. 205 Live, it's not for me. Like, 205 Live, I think, is if you're a really big in-ring wrestling fan and you just love the in-ring wrestling, then that's for you. That's not really my bag. So, but I think you're right. If somebody was actually watching Raw, SmackDown, NXT, NXT UK, 205 Live, watching every single show they put on, I can understand how fatigued you would get through that. And then especially if you're adding in, if you watch New Japan on Access, and you watch the, you know, MLW or AAA or ICW or what, like, how do you find the time?
What about Impact Wrestling? Spare a thought for Impact Wrestling.
Oh, fuck off, Finn. We had Impact Wrestling rubbish.
I'm up to October now. I'm into October. I'm catching up.
I feel you're just like, you know, in a black hole and an abyss. Kong's back. There's nobody hearing you.
but it's right. And we've just coming off Crown Jewel. And you also got to remember the pay-per-views are so long as well. I mean, Crown Jewel was nearly 4 hours. I mean, I watched the pre-show. Actually, Nakamura versus Rusev, should say, was not a bad match. Probably one of the highlights of the show, actually. And that went out on the pre-show. So if you're going to sit through the pre-show, and it's hard to believe many people do, but, you know, I watch most of it or skip to the points where it's not just recycled videos. I did watch the Nakamura versus Rusev match. So we had that. That was over 4 hours when you're adding the kickoff. And then we had, like, Evolution the previous week. I mean, it's just so much product to get through. And PE does reach a saturation point where you've had enough and you want to watch something else. It's not that you're not hardcore anymore. I don't think that's a phrase that people use anymore. You're not a diehard fan or loyal fan or whatever, but there's just only so much you can watch and still enjoy it.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess we'll see where it goes. So we'll finish up by doing maybe one or two more questions, and then we're going to do some more questions from you guys in the overrun. We have questions galore coming in from the listeners. So Samuel Waz had asked us about Naito, but we already covered that. Okay, so let's do two more. Mark Adamson wants to know, given the usage of Roman's announcement during the Seth Dean feud and Natalya's sunglasses angle on Raw, what point does it become tasteless when using real-life stuff to garner heat, do you think, Finn?
That's a tough question to answer, because it depends on the individual.
Like, where's your line? What to you is tasteless and what's not?
Like, right, so well, I'll tell you one that I found really tasteless when they did it, was when CM Punk and Paul Heyman came out, and they mocked Jerry Lawler, the heart attack. I remember being really offended by that. I thought that was really bad. And I remember in Power Slam at the time, I named the article in which we covered that event, so that Survivor Series event. I think it was part of the hype for the Survivor Series. I think that's right. I think it'd be 2012, I believe.
Yeah, that was.
And I called the feature The Good, The Bad, and The Very Ugly. And I was really offended by that. I remember when Paige was sent out there to make a disparaging remark about Reed Flair to Charlotte. I found that really offensive. There was absolutely no need for that at all. I'm sure Charlotte agreed to it, because if she objected to it, she, you know, wouldn't have made the air. But there are, again, a lot of pro wrestlers now, especially in WWE, are under pressure to agree to lots of different things. because where else are they going to be? And they don't want to get the reputation for being difficult with the writing team. They want to be team players. That's the way they've been brought up in the business, to just go along to get along. That's very much the mentality. It's not like it was back in the old days where wrestlers would refuse to do jobs. And people say, no, I'm not doing that. No, I'm not putting that guy over. I'm not working with that guy. You don't really hear of that anymore, because that's not the mentality in wrestling, certainly in WWE anymore. So a lot of things do offend me. Not, I wouldn't say a lot of things, but some things in wrestling do offend me when there's no sort of entertainment value to it. And it's just done. It's done almost to be horrible. And you can be a really effective heel without being really nasty and unpleasant. So there is a line. It is very difficult to describe where that line sits, because it depends on the situation, the circumstances, the players, what's actually being exploited. So there are things that do offend me. And there are other things that I think, well, no, that's all right. That's fair game, because that can be used. And I don't think anyone's really going to be hurt by it. I mean, I always remember when there was the Michelle McCool and Layla. They were doing the storyline with Mickey James.
Well, Peggy James, yeah.
Peggy James. And they were sent out there to belittle her for gaining weight. And I remember there was an angle, I forget when it took place, you'll have to forgive me, but I remember Mickey James, she actually cried. And they got a tear out of her. And I don't know whether that was good acting or she was really upset. But I remember that and thinking, you know, this is the, okay, you can say, oh, they're just being heels. And that's fair game, and she's going to get her revenge in the end, so the heels will get her comeuppance and the babyface triumphs and blah, blah, blah. But I think there are things that you shouldn't do, just on grounds of good taste. But what is good taste? That's all subjective, isn't it? That's very much dependent upon your own opinions.
Also, you have the problem that you have a boss who is willing to do anything to embarrass himself. So it feels like everybody else would be in the same mindset, even though they're not. You know, like, yeah. Vince is willing to do anything to make himself look like an idiot, or to, you know, book any angle. And so, I mean, another one that you had mentioned, the one that Mark had mentioned, the thing with Natalia on Monday. I didn't really think it was poor taste. I just thought it was crap.
Yeah.
Because I fully believe Natalia would 100% be up for doing an angle involving Jim the Anvil Neidhart. No problem. I don't think he would have had a problem with it. They just don't strike me as a family who would have had an issue with it. But, you know, just to introduce these shades, and it wasn't even the shades that he really wore, and then she's, you know, on the ground like her dad's just died again. It was just crap.
It was lousy. Her acting performance was terrible. I mean, it was just totally over the top. I mean, why would she have that breakdown again? I mean, does this mean that we're going to have a continuation of the Riot Squad versus...
No, it looks fan. Like, I can't have any
like,
more.
That looks like that's continuing. I mean, that there is...
17 fucking minutes of my life that I'm never going to get back.
It's just that we don't need to see that again. Give us something new, Christ's sake. We're just not recycling.
Who's walking up? Because I just don't believe that Vince McMahon's going, let's do that six women tag. I don't think he cares. So who's going up to him going, Vince, we should do this six women again? Let's move on.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, I didn't really, to me, it just felt unnecessary. It just felt like this is the reason why we're doing this. So we can tack this on the end and upset some people. And
the Roman, Seth and Dean stuff, I actually don't mind that, because I don't think Roman has a problem with it. And I think that those three guys have enough clout that if they didn't want to do it, or that if they felt it, you know, I feel like that could have been kiboshed if need be. So I feel like with those three, I think that's part of a big long-term story they're going to be telling with Seth and Dean. So I don't necessarily have an issue with it, but I do understand it's not for everybody and that people might be offended by it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I get it as well, but I mean, I don't have a problem with it either, because they could take it much further than they have, and at that point it would be highly offensive. I don't believe they're going to do that. I think they've gone as far as they're going to go with it, but I could be wrong. I've certainly been wrong before about this company, and I'm sure I will be again.
Okay, so I'll just do one more question, then we'll go over to the overrun. Asad okay. Abbas wants to know, with TV ratings going down in general, do you think the WWE will start to push their weekly TV onto big streaming services such as Netflix and Amazon Prime? The easy answer to that is no, because the reason that they have so much money is because Fox and USA have thrown so much money at them. And even though the ratings are down, ratings are down everywhere on TV right now.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much competition right now for people's eyeballs, isn't there? And there's so many entertainment options out there.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're on Netflix, if you're necessarily going to get 2 to 3 million people every single week. Because on Netflix, it's you know, think of it when you go into Netflix and you watch something, you're 10 minutes and you go, oh, I'm not really feeling this one right now, go watch something else.
Exactly. You need to be on TV because that's your shop window to the world. That's how you make new fans. You need to be on cable. You need to be grabbing those kids when they're growing up or they're watching it and the flick channels, the flick surfing. And it's like, oh, this is wrestling. Oh, and I'll give this a chance. It's not something you shouldn't have to. New fans are not going to pay to watch something because until they become fans, they don't pay to watch something. So you need to be accessible to all to replace the fans that you're driving off with your crappy product.
Yay!
But you're right. You need to be accessible to all. You need to have that shop window on TV that is accessible to everyone who has cable or everyone who subscribes to USA. And as you say, Kenny, it's the TV rights fees for years have been WWE's number one revenue stream. Why would they take their TV? Why would they put their programs somewhere else? It's economic. That would be economically illiterate.
Although I do want to say, Asad, I do also, Asad, also, this made me laugh. I thought you'd like it, Finn. Also, this is not really a question, but Finn, if you bump into or know a person called Tazim who lives in Cumbria, don't talk to her because she is a bitch. Okay.
I will bear that in mind.
Bear that in mind. But to your point, Asad, is that, you know, the one thing that's going to be interesting is when they do get onto Fox with SmackDown. With USA, they can do whatever they want. With Fox, they have to do well to stay on Fox, the network channel. So there is an impetus for them to do well on that, which is why you're probably going to see all the big names on SmackDown as of early 2020, maybe?
Next October it starts, doesn't it?
Yeah, I just mean like once it's kicked off, if it's not doing the numbers straight away. I mean, like I would be amazed. Ronda Rousey's going to be on SmackDown at that point. I would just be part of the reason they got that deal was having Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
So we shall see. But that's it for us in the main show. We're going to go over to the overrun, do some more questions, talk about issue 76 of PowerSlam magazine. Finn, where can people go if they would like to buy a copy of one of your lovely ebooks or say hello to you and your absolutely lovely face?
My website is finleymartin.co.uk, which people I'm sure know by now. My Twitter is @finleymartin. And if you see me at the Edge show next Tuesday night, Kenny?
Yep, Tuesday night, yep.
Do come over and say hello.
Yeah.
So where can people find you, Kenny?
You find me at KennyMC1985 or @inside_the_ropes. Our tour with The Undertaker is sold out in Glasgow. We sold it in London. We added a few more general admission. We sold it in Manchester. We had a few more general admission. So right now we're sitting at less than 50 general admission left in London and in Manchester. So if you want to come and see this show, do not miss out. You need to be there. But yeah, the events have sold out. I'm a happy, happy man. Thank you everybody for spending all your hard-earned money on it. I really appreciate it. And the Edge shows are next week. InsideTheRopes.co.uk/Edge. Get in touch and buy your tickets. He's going to be here. We're going to be in Belfast on Saturday at the Limelight. We're going to be in Dublin on Sunday at the Tivoli. Monday at the Dome in Tufnell Park in London. Tuesday at the Comedy Store in Manchester. And we finish up in Glasgow at St. Luke's on Wednesday night. Really looking forward to these shows. Edge is one of those guys who has a really fascinating career with loads of different things to talk about. And we'll get to the end of it and we'll probably still have 100 things we didn't get to. So, looking forward to that one as well. So, Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.